Welcome to A Rock and a Hard Place, the podcast that explores why minerals matter, their importance to society, and the role they will play in the low-carbon future. I'm your host, Thomas Hale, a graduate student exploring the Mineral Security Nexus at the University of Delaware in the Minerals, Materials, and Society program. Join me as I speak with leading experts in the field of critical minerals to discuss some of the most pressing challenges facing society and learn more about their experience working in this emerging space. Enjoy the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 2 of my conversation with Anna, Director of Energy Leadership at Clean Energy Leadership Institute and VP of Communications at the U.S. Association of Energy Economics. Anna, I'd like to continue our conversation by discussing the idea of educating future leaders about energy security and economics. For many years, institutions in Washington, D.C. have really trained energy leaders on heavily carbon-based markets. With increasing demand for critical materials and critical metals, new concepts and political dynamics are being introduced, which are foreign to many of these heavily carbon-based industries. I know oil and gas and coal are not going to go away in the near future. We saw that with the energy crisis in Ukraine. But for me, I see very little programming in Washington, D.C. surrounding courses and politics related to critical mineral supply chains. From a technical perspective, there's definitely a knowledge gap with industry and young leaders. But I feel this issue also extends into our own world, which is the policy and international affairs world. So how should educational institutions go about discussing these very important issues around critical minerals and energy transitions?
Again, wonderful question, Tom. I do agree with you that we would be hard-pressed to go online and find a course that is offered by a university, a college, or an NGO with a headline, Critical Minerals 101. Here are all the facts. I do think that the Colorado School of Mines and especially Morgan Bazilian's group puts out tremendous research all around this issue. So if you want to learn something about this, follow this institution and the research group online. They put out great stuff. What I'm seeing is that there are two schools of thought that are present in energy education around this time. As you mentioned, our traditional oil and gas folks are not surprisingly closer to understanding of critical minerals and how things get mined. What are the material flows? So I really want to compliment our professors and students who work on these issues. And I do think that renewable energy programs around the US, but also around the world, what I've seen in Europe, and I'm sorry, my world is very narrow in the places where I have worked in Europe and the US, it seems that renewable energy programs would benefit very strongly from integrating these topics into their curriculum. I think there is a little bit of that signaling going on is that renewable energy equals good. So how can it do any harm? We are saving the planet from climate change. At the same time, again, as we're reaching these gigawatt scale developments, these are the hard questions that are now being asked. And we need to train the next generation of leaders in understanding them. It's also very interesting to observe, and I'm a lecturer at Johns Hopkins University, how these issues are often wrapped into classes on geopolitics. So these issues are being discussed, but in a softer manner, rather than understanding the nitty-gritty of, hey, this is how critical mineral gets dug up, processed, transported, and integrated into the supply chain, and who are the players.
I remember when I was at George Washington University doing my master's, and as a student who had a fascination with rocks and minerals and geology, everyone called me the rock nerd in a good way. But it was the fact that when I would talk about critical minerals, that was such a foreign concept to some of the security students and some of my fellow colleagues that were going into security, that they didn't always see the nexus, as I call it, or the mineral security nexus of how supply chains and metals and sourcing of metals really integrates and overlaps with, you know, human security, environmental security, energy security, economic security. And so talking more about rocks has always been a goal of mine. But I think, as you said, it is essential for these academic institutions. And I'm glad you brought up the Colorado School of Mines, because the team over there and the expertise that they build is just unmatched, especially in the technical side of these challenges. So while we're on the topic of educating future leaders, what are some of the key pieces of advice, any helpful tips or insights from your own personal journey that you would like to share with our listeners? This could be for young professionals, mid-career professionals who are trying to understand these emerging energy challenges that we're seeing across the world.
I would like to encourage folks not to get too stuck in one sector. I do think that understanding broader landscape is always a good thing, and attending educational events on topics that have nothing to do perhaps with your field of study is a wonderful thing. An especially fascinating topic for me right now is the rise of the AI. It's been gaining traction in the last couple of months, especially after ChatGPT came out. Some of us, like myself, were working on these issues, how digitalization in general and AI capabilities in particular are going to change the energy industry. And I think that AI might be the next GPT, general purpose technology, just like the invention of steam engine and electricity changed our societal well-being. I do think that there will be a step change very, very soon that will propel us into a better place. So I'm a technological optimist in this way, and I do hope that our society will still maintain resemblance of equality. In other words, that the AI step change is going to help the poor in the Americas as much as the poor in Africa.
So before the last question, I'd just like to learn a little bit about your thoughts on the importance of having leaders who can maneuver both technical aspects of energy challenges while being able to provide good communication around policy, so science communication. How important is it, if you're becoming a future leader in this space, to have both that working knowledge as well as the political skills to enact policies and be able to negotiate with various communities around these very complex issues?
That's a lovely question. I will answer this applying some of the adaptive leadership knowledge that I've been trained in. In the past, my thinking was that as long as we throw technology at a problem, there will be a technological fix, and how lovely that is going to be. So this is kind of the problem setting, technological solutioning. At the same time, most of the energy problems are of an adaptive nature. It means that there is no straight line from A to B that you can draw. And even though as an economist, and I'm sure a lot of engineers feel the same way, this would be the cleanest, the most optimal solution in the real world. This is not what we are observing. And there are so many adaptive challenges that need to be solved, ranging from social acceptance of technologies, equal distribution or fair distribution of costs and benefits, different players who will be affected by certain energy infrastructure moving forward or not. And a smart leader would recognize both kinds of challenges and understand when it's the time to talk about megawatts and dollars per watt, and when it's the time to listen to problems that are more of an adaptive nature and figure out what needs to happen in this moment to create a win-win. Because communities are tired of some energy projects parachuting in, doing the technological fix, expecting the community to be happy and feel happy and blessed that this wonderful technology happened to them, and then moving to the next big technical fix. So there is a general understanding, I believe, now that this is not the best practice. And it would be lovely if our businesses started seeing that too, because I'm currently in the eco chamber of academia, NGO, and government, and it seems like there, this is a common knowledge. I don't know how much the industry is on board with that and whether this just seems too flowery and soft, while it's probably the most important piece. So the projects, for example, I talked about wind earlier. The wind projects did not fail in the past because of the technical problems. Mostly these were adaptive problems that involved multiple stakeholders. The leaders need to understand which one is which.
No, well said. And I really do appreciate the comments on the echo chamber, because You know, it is important for us when we get in our little cubbies and our little silos to remind ourselves that not everyone thinks or sees the world like us. There's so many different dynamics. And in issues like that, we have to be able to look outside and understand how other fields are assessing these challenges, look at how other people are looking at these challenges, whether it's from the community or from a business or from a government perspective. And again, what you talked about with adaptive, I mean, all of that is really important for these future leaders. So before we end, in a few sentences, and I know we've talked a little bit today about energy and minerals, and I know that that supply chain is very long in between the two. But from your perspective, and from the work that you've done, and as you're looking out into the world today, why do minerals matter? Or why do you see minerals becoming important for your work that you're doing? And I ask this of all my guests. So from your own point of view, from your own perspective, why are minerals important to your work or to the issues that you're discussing?
This is a wonderful question. And since I'm an ardent cook, I'd like to mention that you can always make an omelet from some sorts of ingredients that are in your fridge, and this omelet would probably taste nice. However, my priority is to know where these ingredients were sourced from. And if possible, I go and get organic eggs for my family for health benefits. In that sense, when we're doing energy transition, critical minerals is the salt and pepper without which a meal will not work, even though they might be small components of, say, of a wind turbine or a solar panel. Without these, our energy transition is not going to happen. So I would love to see more environmental accountability and social accountability with respect to sourcing those and putting it out there for the end consumer to decide, or the developer, the installer, to decide what kind of products they would like to source. What is the biggest challenge is obviously to make it credible. And the second is whether this is going to further inflate the cost of energy transition. Nothing new here, but it's extremely important.
Well, thank you, Anna, so much for coming on the podcast and having this exciting conversation about energy leadership. I want to remind everybody to please check out the Clean Energy Leadership Institute. And if you're in the right position, please try to check out and apply for their upcoming cohort before the deadline. I will share this link in our materials online. And Anna, again, have a wonderful rest of your week. I look forward to speaking with you further and continuing this conversation offline. Until next time, I'm Thomas Hale. I'm your host of A Rock and a Hard Place. I'll see you for another discussion on the next episode. Thank you for joining us on another episode of A Rock and a Hard Place. Be sure to follow me on LinkedIn and check out our website, Mineral Choices, for more content. If you would like to be a guest on our podcast or contribute to our website, then please reach out. We love hearing from you, so do get in touch. And until next time, keep on rocking.